You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network.
K-E-8-R-U-H.
Ah, you either fixed the PTT button or you found it. We didn't hear you yesterday. Good morning, W-8-R-C-Y.
Ah, yes, I did not have a morning drive yesterday. I worked from home, had some things that I had to get done at home, so I was not out here. So, was not broke nor lost. Just wasn't near it.
Well, see, what happens when you're not on the air, we miss you. You know, I mean, it's like, we miss the hell out of Dakota. You know, that's like crickets over on that side, but definitely, you know, when somebody's not there, you kind of check on it or something, and I mean, we kind of knew you were okay, but that's why I wanted the broken PTT, or, you know, you couldn't find the PTT. That was my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I get it. Yeah, it was Sean back from his big adventure yesterday?
I believe he got back Tuesday night, and he went to the office yesterday, and as far as I know, he still has a job, and the building's still standing.
Well, that's good. They shouldn't be that out of control that they can't survive without him for 2 days. But, big news, 12 miles back open at DeQuinder, both lanes. This is going to make my morning drive a little bit easier.
What about 11 in DeQuinder? The last time I was down at Starbucks this morning, and I looked down towards 11 mile. It looks like there's still some construction down at that end when I crossed DeQuinder, trying not to get hit. But, yeah, so pretty soon maybe you'll be able to do the drive-by on my place again, or are you going to still have you grown to like the shortcut through the neighborhoods?
Now, 11 miles is far more effective. Driving through that neighborhood gets the job done, so I don't have to wait in traffic, but I need that 11 mile to go back to two lanes because it does create a problem, and it does take a few minutes longer to go through that neighborhood. It's not a shortcut, that's for sure.
Yeah, I remember they were doing some work out here on DeQuinder, you know, like right in my area between those two traffic lights on either side of my traffic light, and they were, like, you know, cutting out squares in cement and stuff like that, and doing all kinds of things, and they even took out our crosswalk, and we had no, you know, I mean, I'm mobile, but we have a lot of seniors that can't cross without a crosswalk, and that was havoc. That was about two or three summers ago, and then to see them working on it again, I'm going, gee whiz, why don't you just dig the whole thing up and just, you know, start over, because, I mean, they've been doing, I've been here 12 years, coming up on 13, and they've been doing work on DeQuinder now between 11 mile and 12 mile and the intersections at least four times, you know, that whole 1 mile stretch out in front of me here for quite some time, and it's just getting to be monotonous.
I hear you. It is exhausting. They just put up barrels over by me on Mac in between 8 Mile and St. Clair Shores, and it is causing absolute chaos over there. You know, you got the turnarounds, and they're blocked by traffic, and it just makes it exhausting to get to any of the businesses, to get down any of the side streets. All this construction just has to end, and I don't understand why it takes so long. You know, And I don't think it's the fault of the guy who's actually doing the work. It's, I don't know how they can schedule it to last 4 or 5 months. It's insane.
Well, you look at your local city and municipalities and the county, because some of the roads are county roads, some of them are city roads, and that's where the responsibility is. But even for these contractors, you know, you've got all these freeway projects just, you know, before even one starts and another one finishes, they start another one. How many crews do you have? How many members of personnel and employees you have that do this work? You know, people want the roads fixed, but they just spread themselves so thin trying to do all these projects all at once. I mean, you know, like I say, I don't drive every day, but I hear the horror stories from, you know, yourself and others that, you know, do the commute. I mean, thank God my girlfriend doesn't have to drive from Chesterfield to Farmington Orchard Lake every day anymore. She only has to go out there one day a month, first Wednesday of the month, for the monthly sales meeting. And she says, if I had to do this every day, granted, she's got a company car and, you know, gas and all that, but still, driving from 23 and 94 all the way out to Maple and almost M5 would be nuts.
Yeah, you know, you would think that they would run these crews 7 days a week and have, like, you know, flip-flopping crews so that they're not paying over, you know, 30, 40 hours of overtime to everybody every week. Because I could imagine that would get difficult to project the cost of the projects. But to your point, they're spread thin. If they just went from project to project, you know, complete one and move on to the next one or close to that, you'd think that it would be far more efficient and things would get done faster. But I'm not in construction. I don't own all those assets, so I'm not the one trying to keep them busy and making money. So I you know, only have so much room to complain here. I don't know how it all works. But I can tell you, I don't think it works for me.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, when they did 696 from 94 to basically, I think, DeQuinder. No, they didn't do DeQuinder. They ended at 11-mile road because they still got to do that one portion between the 11-mile exit ramp that you're familiar with and the actual DeQuinder road around that bend. That section still has to be finished. Or is it the DeQuinder to I-75? I don't know. There's one section they didn't finish. Maybe they just went up to DeQuinder, and they got to do that section between DeQuinder and I-75. I believe that's what it is. Why didn't they just go to 75? Or why didn't now with this 696 construction do it the other way? But they got to come back now and do this 1 mile, 2 mile stretch between DeQuinder and the I-75 interchange on 696. That's going to be another headache for everybody that tries just to even use the interchange again. I don't know. And then there's the service drives. I know they had, when they did 696, 94 to DeQuinder, they were supposed to redo the service drives as well as the exit and entrance ramps. So that was supposed to be a total revamp. I don't even think that's finished yet. I feel sorry for, you know, the people that commute every day, and I'm glad I don't drive every day. And then again, I'm retired, so I wouldn't be driving every day, but holy cow. I've seen a lot since 94 has been built. I think I was like five or six years of age when they built 94 from 8 Mile out to Bourgeron. And they dug the gully at 11 Mile Road in 94 where my parents' house was, 2 blocks away from my parents' house. That whole freeway is still just fine. It hasn't been dug up or anything, so I don't know. That's another thing, too, quality of workmanship.
Yeah, they just redid a big section of 94 over there, not at 11 Mile, but from Gratiot to maybe 16 or North River. That all summer they were doing a resurfacing project over there. So on the weekends, 94 has been a disaster. But on the plus side, it seems to be just on the weekends. So, I don't know. And that section of 696 between 75 and DeQuinder, that's going to be quite the cluster when they have to do that, because they're going to have to just close the whole expressway, and they're going to probably have to redo the bridges, which is going to cause a problem on 75 also. It's going to be mayhem. I might have to drive up to 16 Mile Road to get to the office, which will be awful because it'll take me like 45, 50 minutes to get to work. But hey, I'm pulling up here, so I'm going to be clear on your final. It was good talking this morning, Donald, and I will be working remote tomorrow, so I may not get on the air. So either this afternoon or Monday, we'll see you then. KERUH, and I'll be clear on your final.
Gave a second there to see if Sean wanted was going to jump in or not. Doesn't sound like he's up and around yet. All right, then. Friday I didn't think he'd be on here because you usually do work from home on Friday. So, all right, if I don't catch you, have a good day. It's hot and humid already out there. It's 97% humidity. And it's just going to be a hot, muggy one for sure. Pleasure talking to you. Good conversation. WARCY, clear.
WNFU.
There you are. And Anthony's already landed his plane, so he says good morning. W8RCY.
Roger. Yep. A little late on the road again today. Not been a good couple of weeks.
Don't feel bad. You wouldn't believe what I just did. I picked up my Starbucks coffee cup, and there's no push-to-talk button on it.
Sure there is. When you key up, you get a sploosh. All right, let's see here. Crave. And a couple of dying plants out front. One tipped over flower pot. Opening soon. No movement since the movement on the truck.
And if you Google Craves Warren, Michigan, Google it, you will get the Google posting, and it shows everything, including it's open. It would probably say that we are open and we close at like 9. And at the bottom is now, like I say, the phone number, which I've only had for a few weeks now, and still no answer. I haven't called them since Monday. I'll call them again next Monday and see. But, yeah. I just say,
What's really strange is that they have the webpage. They have the webpage up and running and say they're open. You know, you can go through all that effort, but you can't put something, you can't correct the sign, or even on the website say, you know, opening soon, you know, something, just anything. It's weird that they put that much effort into everything and not they have any kind of correspondence at all.
Well, even when since the phone number posted, like I said, a couple weeks ago, I call and I just let it ring, and you'd think after 15 rings, a voicemail or something would come on, or a message saying, hi, this is Craze, we'll be opening on, you know, August 1st, 2026, or whatever. Nothing, it just rings, rings, rings. And I said, well, after 15 rings, there ain't no voicemail, I'm going to hang up.
They set it to 16 rings to answer. There you go.
Yeah, I'm laughing on that one. Yeah, you're probably right. That would be my luck. Back to you.
Oh, well.
Oh, man.
I was debating on which car to take to work this morning. Work car? The old one, so that I could wipe down a couple of things. prepping for the sale, or the new one, because I haven't driven it an inch since I parked it.
As for the new one, obviously we're aware of the antenna issue and how that's going to go in, but what about space for radio? Is it going to go like it did? Is it going to go like the old one, or is there console space, or has it changed that much to where you have to maybe take a different strategy on that for the placement?
No, that's all pretty much identical. I know exactly what I wanted to do. Well, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. What has changed is that in that cubby hole where I would normally put the control head is the charging pad for the phone, and I really like that. You just jump in, throw your phone on top of that, it starts charging, it wirelessly connects to the radio system. It makes for a much more, you know, convenient traveling. And, I mean, there's no not connecting your phone to the cars these days. That's the first damn thing you do. But, so I got a, if I'm going to use that map pocket, that or that little cubby hole, I'm going to have to be careful to make sure I can still access that charging pad. So it might change that, but that's okay. I'm a handheld control head guy, and I could see myself doing something with a handheld control head. I don't know. And I'm not too worried about it now. When I actually have to tackle it, that's when I'll sit down. But I more than ever want to get one mobile radio for the vehicle. That's it. Because it's going to be hard enough finding an antenna for one, let alone multiples. But I was never a multiple antenna guy. Unless you count the HF antenna off the trailer hitch, but I don't count that one.
Oh, yeah, I get it. But, you know, it's like every time I rent a vehicle or something, I always look at, if I were to put a radio in one of my vehicles. You know, I mean, granted, my XPRs have remote control heads. And, of course, you can get the hand-controlled mic thing that you speak of and, have a lot of experience with. So that's one thing nice about it. I know mainly with Motorola's, I don't know that much about ham radios that are mobile units. But, yeah, with Motorola, you do have a lot of options to get a radio installed. But like I say, you have quite a few years between the two vehicles and how much they change the, even with the touch screens, some of them are landscape mounted, some of them are portrait mounted, and just that alone can mess up everything for sure. But, you're the professional at this. You've done a lot of mounting, and no doubt you'll get it figured out.
Yeah, my plan for my plan was I hang the control head for the FM radio, FM/P25, whatever, the mobile. I hang that usually from the overhead console, and the cubby is for the HF radio, the control head for the HF radio, which is in and out. I may do a cup holder thing. There's a cup holder mount you can get. I don't know. But my radio also will display on the internal screen if I buy the appropriate conversion stuff. So I could have it up on the big display screen. So there's a few ways I could go. But again, it's got to wait till the head scratching, because talking about it without actually sitting there looking at it doesn't do me any good. But it's going to be a challenge. Yeah, that's the truth of it. So I got to get the old car listed hastily. Listed it for top dollar. Come on, squirrel, move. There you go. Good grief. Suicide pack with car. Got to get the new one. Just got to wipe down a few things. A little dusty inside being on that dirt road. Want to get that. Got to focus on getting that moved. That's the number one priority now.
you can moan. He's been moaned a few times, too. Don't let him kid you.
Connected to CMN Network.
I'll pass it over to Sean so he can respond. What am I moaning about?
Good morning.
Good morning. He said you got experience in moaning. I said you've been moaned a few times, too. Don't let him kid you.
Well, I try.
I'm only in here for a minute. Morning. Hi, bye. Give me the rest of your...
Morning, Jeff. I didn't recognize your voice. You got a very different sound, whatever radio you're on.
Well, I was on
good morning, Jeff. I, too, thought it was you, but I wasn't sure.
I was on a different repeater. Does that make any difference, Sean?
Yeah, but now it's obvious. You know, now that I know it's you, it's obvious it's you. But before you had given your call, I wasn't 100% sure, so. But your audio is a little different than normal. I don't know if it's because you're here as opposed to digital or what, but hey, whatever. How's, what's the status up there? You, where you working now? Got anything new going on or anything?
Working at a place I worked at before. Busy, busy, don't have a lot of time for stuff. Switching trucks around a lot, so don't have radio put in there yet, but hopefully one of these days the truck that I'm supposed to get will be fixed and I'll be good to go. So I am pulling in the driveway. Catch you guys later. KBSWR.
Okay, we'll catch you later. Good hearing you. W8FU. Morning, Nick. How's life? Haven't heard you in a bit. So we got Jeff and Nick. Haven't heard in a while. Just making the commute here. A little later than usual, but on time. Are you heading in today?
Yeah, heading in today. It's been a full 4-day week at the office. A very rare oddity lately. I've been traveling a bit and haven't had my vehicle, so no radio in that one. We took all our radios out of our pool cars. Not fun, but I won't digress on that problem. Now I'm doing training for our new CAD. I got a big training while the vendor trains the trainers. On there for a consultant role.
Go ahead, Sean. I'll let you continue. I'm going to back out. I got to get my day started because I have physical therapy this morning. So I'll let you two gentlemen carry on. Have a great day. W8RCY.
All right, Donald. We'll catch you later. And Nick, when you say new CAD, I mean, you're talking about the new CAD you implemented, a couple of years ago, I think you started. It hadn't been all that long. So when you say new CAD, you're still referring to the one you just implemented a couple of years back.
I think you're talking about the phone system. We used the Vesco last fall. But no, we've been on our Motorola E1 as well. And this one is the new Tyler CAD, cloud, state, Fandango.
I thought the call taker equipment was at the same time. It often is. Yeah, we're on Tyler. They love it. They're very responsive to your, you know, to what you want. You know, whereas I mean, I don't know. I don't have a lot of familiarity with the one you were on, but you know, the other option is Clemis, right? You know, but Clemis seems like a, you know, seems like a, like a freighter. You know, it's very hard to steer when it's going in a certain, it's going in a certain direction. It's very hard to move it. So yeah, we switched over to Tyler quite some time ago. I have a few other people I've been hearing doing it. They're very, like I said, very good. Which call taker equipment did you get? Refresh my memory. Sorry about that.
We went with that stuff. So, they've been pretty happy with it. They're pretty responsive to, you know, our needs. No, Tyler's been really responsive. It's just a long, drawn-out process in trying to maintain current and trying to do things with them. It's been quite a challenge because they want you dedicated 40 hours a week to, you know, implementation of their things, but still trying to maintain what I have on the road today.
Well, real good. I don't know if Angela's been, our, from our place has been involved, but she is, her and a couple of her people are absolute OGs when it comes to Tyler, so, and they're very, very easy to work with, so if you ever wanted to go offline and discuss things, it's that's a fantastic resource there. The previous administrator was great, loved her, but this new gal, boy, I tell you what, she's a dynamo, man. She gets it done. Is this part of the E911 SENET thing? I don't think so, right? You guys have been on that for a long time. This isn't related to that, is it?
No, we've been on that. 19, something like that. Yeah, we switched over to call work in 19. That's when we got it. We've been on it since. So, no, that's, I mean, next gen's coming at some point, but I'm not sure what the plan is there. I haven't heard.
All right, well, we're knee deep in it right now. They picked, our call taker equipment is ACOS, and, that's about the last thing I'm going to say about that in this forum. And we've been on Tyler for a long time, and I know that's been very successful. And the whole E911 SENET thing is rolling out right now. And I think we're leapfrogging. We're going right to next gen. So, yay fun.
Yeah, and you said about directing a freighter. Yeah, that product is geared towards one discipline, and that's it. And then the other two disciplines, with the brick around their ankles, nothing to do. We struggle with that up in our county. Like the CAD and the vehicle, but kind of doesn't do fire very well.
All right, well, we might have had this conversation before, but, yeah, that was exactly our complaint. And Tyler has absolutely responded to that and is everything we had hoped in that regard. Very good for the fire side of the house.
Oh, absolutely. We don't deal with it down here in this center, but our two northern centers, deal with Tyler on the fire side, and the actual app they have for either a iPad or Android device, tablet-wise, is, wow, fire chief is just a tablet. They don't necessarily have to get a Windows computer in the vehicle anymore. And that cuts down on the cost. And then you look at it in the UP, and cost is a big number one thing, you know, what's going to cost them.
Oh, yeah, when we first went, we were putting full, you know, the whole works in, and, oh, it was just such a pain in the ump. You know, but everybody's been slowly transitioning over to tablets, like you said, and it's been, thank God, because it's just so much work to try to maintain the, you know, the full-blown setups and all that stuff and the modems. We do have a little trouble with the, coverage in the north end, and I don't know what provider you're using. Now, I'm going to switch gears on you, talking about your firework. I don't know what provider you use, and I know that there's always been some issues being, you know, spitting distance to Canada with roaming and stuff like that. How does that all work?
Well, our tablets and our fire stuff, they're on Verizon, and I do have a problem with that. But all my personal stuff, I'm on FirstNet, and I don't have a problem with it. So, because it locks onto band 14, and I don't have to worry about it. So, that's all I'll say about that.
All right, well, that's interesting. I just got FirstNet enabled on my personal phone. I've got a dual SIM'd it, and I have T-Mobile personally, and then I have a FirstNet account, and then my work phone's Verizon, so I got all three, and I am constantly making checks, you know, on the three services wherever I go. I'll tell you, the dark horse, the one that shocked me is T-Mobile, how good their coverage is lately. I got to order a coffee here. Hold up. All right, got my cold brew ordered. But, I was shocked at how good T-Mobile's doing, but, you know, I don't know how well they work in the industry, you know, with priorities and things like that. But we clearly know how that works with Verizon and AT&T FirstNet, so.
Yeah, right now we're... In two of our districts, we're implementing new modems, the latest and greatest in Harrison. And we're doing eSIM now. Single SIM, eSIM, because we have two APNs. We run a public and a private APN in all of our modems. And it's been a little bit of a challenge because the new devices and new ways of doing things, but I think we got it all worked out. I mean, we had some issues with some 4G to 5G handoff stuff. So while the vendor worked with Ericsson to work it out in the modem, we've actually forced all the modems back to 4G temporarily so we figure out the issues. I mean, they've been really great to work with, and both companies have been working together well. So it's been actually pretty nice.
Well, real good. Sounds like, you know, it's work, right? But sounds like it's going well. That's cool. I have, I'm a little bit more detached from the, you know, from the center than you. Obviously, you know, I have a little different role, but I do get in there and muck it up a little bit sometimes. I'd like to spend more time in there to get a better understanding. I think it would help me with other aspects of my actual job.
Lately, I've been working more on the mobile side and out of the post than I've been in here. I've been dealing with that modem issue, which directly affects my mobile issue. So I've kind of been dealing with that. So I haven't been here a lot, that's for sure.
You know, speaking of mobile side and switching it back over to non-work related stuff, Phil, KPR, he picked up, like you, he's got the he's got APXs. I think you've got an XTL, but he's got the APXs, and he dual decked it. He's got one V and one U, and he's dual decking it. Now, I know you can buy, you know, like you've got dual, but he's got dual deck, and they actually both work simultaneously. It's a very cool setup with this new E5 control head. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have seen the E5. We got to make some control fives. I wish it wasn't so much. I'd pick one up for my GB here. Got a handheld. But yeah, I'm running the APX, the VHF, UHF in one. But this one has the code plug in it, or the firmware in it, for running dual deck. So if I could find, and I think you can do 6500 with the 7500 dual deck. If I could find a 6500 and get the chief to let me pay the registration fee, I'd put an 800 in here, and then I'd be sweet.
Well, that's exactly where I was going with that. I was thinking, I'm trying to work out a deal for a Viking mobile right now, and I just keep getting crickets from the rep. So I may do the same thing, but I was going to go a different route. I was going to get a 800 VHF 7500, and then I would get a 6500 in UHF. Because I spent most of my time on UHF. So then I could have the UHF radio sitting on one side, and then I could share the VHF 800, because I use both of those much less, you know, than UHF, at least when I'm not working. So, but I was thinking about doing it that way. But you can absolutely mix and match and do what you're describing. And that's the way to do it, too. You know, do the VU and then a 6500 for 800. You know, there might be some cost reasons why that would be more effective. I think you can find a 6500 APX easy. But you know, the VHF 800, 7500s are pretty much the most common of them all. So I thought maybe that might be might be easier to find one of those and then add a 6500 UHF to it. So if I can't get my Viking, which also does DMR, that's the key. If I can't get my Viking mobile, then I may very well be doing that that setup.
Well, as a department, we have another 7500 that we took out when we got all the Kenwoods, but it's VHF 800, but it doesn't have the firmware or the flash in it to do dual deck. But I'm sure I could find the flash to do dual deck somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, because then you'd have, then you'd have quad in there. You'd have two VHF twice, but you keep one on P25 and the other one just floating. I don't know. Simplex calling, who knows. Anyhow, I am pulling into my parking spot here, so I will listen out. If there's anything I have to comment on, that'll be my last, but otherwise this will be my last. W8FU, after yours.
All right. Well, I just did the same. Just back in the spot here. So now we'll talk about that other issue soon. So, but we'll catch you. Have a good one at work, and we'll maybe catch you this afternoon. 7-3, read NFC clear.
All right, later, Nick. Good hearing you. W8FU.
KKKJL.
You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
KCHKJL.
You're connected to CMN Network. Currently connected to CMN Network.
MABDZ Mobile.
Connected to CMN Network.
NAVDZ, this is AAAUHG. This is AAAUHG. Yep, this is AAAUHG on the Siemens Network. John, I don't know if there's scanning or whatnot. I think I hear you calling on a different receiver.
You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network.
WDAKLO on mobile.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
WAEAP, WAEAP from NACAF, do you copy?
W8FU.
Connected to CMN Network.
KPR.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, just heading over from work, basically. So, you got everything installed already?
No, I'm going to maybe reach out again to, my guy, tell him that, look, I need to either know this is happening or I need to move on, because I don't want to go figuring out how to put stuff in this new one just to change it.
Yep, that sounds like a plan. Be real interesting to hear what he's got to say. All right. So did you look any more to see if there's any place to put an antenna?
I remember peeking at the roof after we had talked, thinking, my God, it takes up a lot of space. There's much less room up there to work with than I had anticipated. But regardless, no, pretty much... I haven't touched the car since I brought it home. I've been so busy, I drive my work vehicle in yesterday, and then as soon as I got home, I had to do a whole bunch of stuff with the other car. And, tonight, I've got to, do some stuff with the old one. I got to get it cleaned up a little bit, you know,
it's pretty good shape, but I just want to go over it, you know, like wipe down things in the interior and door creases and things like that, just kind of knock out. So I'll be spending the afternoon just kind of detailing the old one. So I just haven't had time to touch at all with the new one at all. It's just sitting there.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So you're selling it yourself, but you're going to put it in like a... Are you going to try to sell the one of these like Carvanas or something, or are you going to just put an ad out and see what you get?
I got two or three offers from those kind of places. I think Kelly Blue Book hooked me up with somebody. There's a guy in Roseville. There's a Carvana offer, and they're all coming in, you know, about 20. So I listed it privately on cars.com and on Facebook Marketplace for $23,500 with the hopes that I can, you know, keep it fairly close to that. But, you know, because it's got that transferable warranty. And but that's not, if I sell it to a dealer, it's lost. So I have an advantage because I can sell it with that transferable Ford warranty. And I'm going to see if that helps at all.
Is that the, like, 100,000 mile 7-year warranty? That's what I had on mine.
Well, you got to buy it. You buy it from Ford, and never at the dealership. There's a couple of places that are famous for selling it at extremely discounted prices. But yeah, you can buy whatever, I forget how long they'll let you go up to, but you can buy 6, 7, 8 years from the date of in-service. So, you know, you get this 3-year 36, and then they'll extend your 3-year 36 bumper-to-bumper as far out as you'd like. And you know, right now I think that one had a 7-year 70,000. But you can get 70-year 140,000, you can get 5-year 50,000 or 5-year 100,000, you can put it together any way you want. And but it's all Ford. It's exactly the same as the Ford warranty.
Yeah, I got the official Ford warranty when I bought the car. I said it was bumper to bumper, 7-year, 100,000, and it worked out just about right. I hit 100,000 right around the 7th year, and it was. I'm trying to remember, did I hit 100,000 first or 7-year first? I can't remember. It was very close.
Yeah, we'll be lucky to put 10,000 on. Now, I don't know if once I retire that'll go up. It very well might. But it could go down. I don't really know. I don't know what retirement's going to look like. But I'm going 10,000. So I'm probably going to go 7, 10,000 or 770 or 880. I'm really not sure which one I'm going to do. I got a couple of guesstimations or, you know, estimates from them. But it's gone up a little since when I bought my 22. But I just like the peace of mind and, you know, and not have to deal with, you know, some of these third-party places. One guy put it best when I was reviewing these a while back. He said that most, you know, most places will tell you what they don't cover. And he says, and it leaves a lot of things, or what they do cover, but it leaves a lot of things in the dark. He goes, the Ford one tells you exactly what they don't, and it leaves almost nothing to chance.
Yeah, I had to use it a couple of times. There was something major. What was it? Something to do with my transfer case or something. It only cost me, and there was a deductible on it, so it cost me $100.
Yeah, I used it one time, and it probably pays for itself in almost any imaginable scenario. Comes with rental car, comes with you know, there's some caveats, you know. The rental car begins after diagnosis, and it's not on the first day. If you come in, get it fixed, and you're gone on the same day, they don't offer a rental. Unless you buy that, you can buy that first day rental. So there's a lot of ways you can package that, but that's the things that are kind of like flexible. No, I like it, and I got 2 years and about 32,000 miles left on that. That I can transfer $75 to transfer to the new owner, no questions asked. So I figure that's a real bonus. Mine's pretty clean, very clean, very low mileage example, and you know, with that 2 year, 32,000's worth of factory warranty left, I'm sure puts me in the you know, in the best buy category.
Sounds right. I remember I had, when I had my Jeep, I had like the premium warranty, and it was great. I if I brought in for service, I'd get a car, you know, to the loaner. I used to love that one.
Yeah, you can buy that. There's a relatively inexpensive first day add-on where you get it, you know, you can get it first day. Because it's, the way it comes, you don't get the first day. If it's in and out the same day, you don't get a rental. But if you buy that first day, and I think it's only like $20 on the grand total, you know, for the duration. And for $20, you get the first day rental. And then the amount they give you for the rental is pretty low. And there's another upgrade you can do for like $80 that'll let you take it to the next level for the rental. So there's you know, those are the things that you can kind of massage, you know, when you're buying it. But no, I like it. I haven't had to use it, right? I'm in my fourth year, so I'm clearly in the, you know, I'm outside of the 3 year, not the 36, but I'm outside of the 3 years. So I, you know, I'm definitely in the realm of the extended. So I will get it for the new one. My new one isn't a year old yet, and it hasn't broke 10,000. So I got time before I have to act.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, anyway, heading home, crossing Woodward. So the cars are out. They're cruising up and down. Turning into the parking lot, so avoid it. about that old Destro we were talking about. Mike at work happens to be talking to Brian, some guy named Brian at the state, and he mentioned that radio or something like that, and the guy says he might have the code plug for that radio. If we send him the serial number, he might have it.
Okay, I don't know Brian, but yeah, that was what I was going to check, and then all this crap happens here with between the funeral and the car thing and all that stuff. I just, until you just mentioned it, I completely forgot.
Yeah, Deb asked me about it, and I said, you've been really busy. So I didn't even mention it, but this guy says apparently they cleared out a bunch of stuff, but he kept a bunch of archives somewhere. He says he might just have it. So we'll see if that happens.
Well, I'm glad it happened this way because I was going to go the same route, and, you know, maybe I wouldn't have got lucky and connected with this guy. Most of the, you know, the guys that I talk to probably just say, yeah, no, we ain't got that. But, so, yeah, maybe you lucked out because I don't know Brian at the RPU. I deal with a couple of other guys, and, you know, this guy sounds like he knows, so. Well, I hope, cross your fingers, that's the best way to do it. Otherwise, you got to read it, and, you know, and there's, I told you that with that particular model, it's a real pain in the rump, because, you know, you got to decide, I guess you got to find out if it's a Spectre or a Spectre Plus, that's the first thing. If it's a Plus, that kind of takes it down the, you know, We can kind of home in on what it needs, but I can't remember. It's been so long now. You either need a rib box or you don't need a rib box, and you either run the new software or the old software. And it's like, it all happened in that Spectra area. So any Spectra you run into, you know, could be any combination. It was always just such a pain in the ass because you have to take everything out. You know, you might jump in one vehicle and, you know, to do a reprogramming and you need this and this, and then the next one you need that and that. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, I think he sent him some solid the software, which I think will only run on the on a X32 platform. So I've got that old laptop I keep around for just such things. So I might have to bring that in and see if we can. If he comes up with the code plug, we might have to load the software up on that thing.
It's been so long, I'm foggy on it, but I think some ran the Spectra software, but I thought you ran the Astro software on the Spectra Plus. So that might have been it. I don't know. If anybody's listening out there that is well-versed in the Spectra nuances between RIB or RIBless and Spectra, Spectra Plus, Spectra versus Astro software, that's what we're talking about. But like I said, it's been a very long time for most of us.
Yeah, definitely to go with it. If it's the RIB, you gotta make sure you got the right sauce to go with it.
Yeah, and then, you know, do you get a dry rub or you get a, you know, wet, you know, so it's just, that's what I mean. It's just a lot to it. It's just not that simple.
Yeah, exactly. All right, yeah, I hope we can get by without having to read it. So figure out what the heck they're doing, because they don't know. They just know they push a button, and the thing goes off, and they can hear everything throughout the whole station. That's all they know.
I'd probably be able to figure it out if I went and looked at it. You know, my guess is that they're call alerting the radio. They're using the horn and lights function to close a contact closure, and then that trips something. If you could verify that there's a pair of wires that trips something, there'll be a pair of wires coming off the connector of the radio that go to something, probably have a relay in it or something like that. Then that's all you need for verification. Then you don't have to worry about how it's programmed. You could just get them a new radio and we could duplicate it without having to worry about how it's programmed. But I'll bet you that's what they're doing. I don't know of any other way the Spectra would do that, because they won't pass tones over 800. And it's usually you do a call alert and then you use the horn and lights function to close a relay, which trips some external alerting system.
Hold on a second, they got all my streets in my neighborhood blocked off. I don't know what they're doing here. Oh, the tree work. Oh, great. Well, I think I sent you a picture of that. There is one right there out of the pin. What, a 15-pin connector in the back? There's, looks like probably an ignition sense. But then some other wires, too. I don't know if it was that clear in that photo.
Could I make out which pins they're connected to? Because I can just tell by the pins they're connected to what they're doing. You know, if they're using an aux IO or something like that. But I'll have to go back and look at the picture. But, you tell Deb that, buy lunch and I'll just road trip down there with you, figure it out.
All right, I'll mention it. All right, so also this caller, is that triggered with like a single tone, or is that a just a digital thing that tells it to trip something?
Yeah, it's low speed data that runs on the control channel, and no audio involved.
Okay, because when we monitor, we can hear a single tone, and then that could just be getting, you know, something to use to get people's attention.
So in the analog days, what we did at our fire stations was we would put out either a two-tone or a single tone. We would use standard audio tones over FM and then decode them and then do things, right? Well, you couldn't do that when you moved to the digital, the P25 systems. So what they did was they would use a digital alerting, some sort of like a call alerting, which was digital, and then that would trip something. But the firefighters were complaining. They said, you know, it used to be nice when we could hear that tone, so we knew it was coming in. We hear the doo-doo, we knew we were going to be getting called out. It was like a prep, you know, like, get ready, the alarms are going off. So we would fake it. We would have it generate a tone. It wasn't actually alerting anything. It was just there to, Shelby was doing that. And you would hear it go out over 800, but it would be all warbly. It would be like, you know, whoop, 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 because 800 P25 didn't do tones cleaning. But they just wanted it so that they would kind of have like a precursor. But, you know, nowadays most alerting systems have that ramped up precursor built in. So there's any number of ways they can skin that cat. And I've seen just about every one of them. So I don't know what they're doing there at that particular location, but it's probably something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It just sounds like a, you know, and then an announcement comes. And I was sitting there one night, I heard it one time, coming over to talk group. So I bet you're absolutely right on that. All right, I'm pulling the garage. Probably going to the office tomorrow. I'll talk to him more about that and see what we can come up with. All right, catch you later, KAPR.
Yeah, just, I mean, maybe it's better instead of trying to, you know, figure out what this old piece of crap radio is, just figure out what do they want to accomplish, you know, and once you know what they want to accomplish, we could, you know, find something you guys, you know, have that can replace it. So I'm sure it's no big deal. I'm sure it's just something that can be call alerted and then trip something. Be easy peasy to build one yourself, even if they don't have something. Probably even something better. I've got designs for ones that do everything from just tones to canned messages, you know, how they like, you know, let go of your, grab your socks. They'd like a nice soothing voice to say that. All right, later. W8FU.
You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
The Goodyear blimp is floating over the Pontiac Courthouse. W8RJD. W8RJD.
Whiskey 8, Bravo, Papa Delta, standing by.
You're connected to CMN Network.
K-E-A-W-U-O.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
Good afternoon there, John, N-8-W-R-O on an H-T.
K-E-A-W-U-O.
Good afternoon, sir. Sound pretty good for an HQ. Tiny bit of little crackling back there, but I'm sure I have some too. But how's Tim doing today? Hanging in there?
Yeah, it's a good game. Not really doing too much today. Looking forward to the net. You got the net coming up, right?
Yeah, it's yes we do, and I think it will be a good one. I put a kind of a lot of work into this one. Good topic. Got lots of pictures and links and information. Fair amount of research was done, and I think it's a pretty relevant topic based on what you recently saw there. So. And that just happened by accident, obviously. I didn't plan for that, but I think it all worked out, and maybe it worked out for a reason.
All righty. Well, I won't give anything away. We'll wait to unveil it at 7 o'clock when we check the box on the net log there. Sounds interesting, though.
Yes, sir. I will let you take that call. K-E-A-W-U-O with N-A-W-R-O.
Oh, no need. I just sent it to voicemail. It's more or less a advertiser.
Gotcha. Gotta love that. Probably sent more people to voicemail than I've answered. It's a nice feature to have, especially for those type of situations where it's not really someone I need to or want to talk to. It's someone trying to sell me something. It's actually partly why I kept the Colorado number. I still have a 720 area code, and it actually works out pretty well. There's a lot of junk mail or messages and whatnot related to all kinds of different things that it seems like we Michiganders get stuck getting. But I don't get them because I'm a Coloradan.
Interesting. Yeah, this one was very similar to the one that you had just the other day. They called just a few minutes ago, sent it to voicemail. I'll deal with it later. And then he didn't call back. It's like, don't call me back.
Yeah, exactly. It's to me that's rude, you know. It's if it was important, you know, which I'm sure it's not, I would have answered because it would have been someone important calling me. Yeah. Actually, it's funny that you bring that up because that guy was blowing up our purchasing agent today, and he was on the phone with other customers. And so that guy called my phone because he couldn't get through to the other guy. And it's just like, holy cow, this type of thing can be easily handled with a text message or an email or even a voicemail. You do not need to speak with someone, you know. And then, you know, to me it was like, I'm an estimator. I'm not even in the same building as our purchasing guy. So he calls me up to tell me that he needs these paint cans put in a place outside of a building. And it's like, okay, well, now I have a problem I have to deal with that I can't just, you know, your inconvenience has become my inconvenience. And, I don't understand people that have that kind of urgency, but not enough common sense to deal with it properly.
N-A-W-R-O. Yeah, it's like when they catch your number, they can circumvent the normal, you know, method of business. And, aha, I've got another guy. I'm going to call that other guy. And, you know, no, that's not the way it works. I mean, maybe once in a blue moon in a quasi-semi-emergency maybe, but not just for their convenience. Anyhow, enough of that, I guess. We get to rant a little bit, don't we?
Yes, we do. I just wish everybody had radios. They just make things so much more convenient. Phone calls, it's like, I feel like people demand my attention. Radios, it's like, yeah, I'll throw out the call sign. If he answers, great. If not, you know, I'll try again later. And it's kind of like a text message, you know. It's just one of those things you deal with at your leisure. But, hey, I guess such is life. But, so you're out with an HT. What are you up to? Going for a walk, enjoying the weather? A cloudy, hazy day?
Yeah, just in the back of the backyard by the back fence, and I did notice that it's not sunny today, so that's good for me, because I don't like sitting in the sun. And so just sitting in the chair, and the other night, when just about dusk, on the other side of the rail here of the fence in the backfield, I actually saw a buck, you know, like about a two-pointer maybe, right at my back fence. They're never there, so I don't know what he was up to. There's a poplar tree here that maybe he was getting the bark off of that or something. I'm not sure, but that's pretty interesting. Glad I had the back gate closed, or he'd be actually in the yard.
Gotcha, yeah. You know, you said you were out in the backyard by the back fence. I'm thinking, what? You were there the other day when you saw the groundhog. So I'm wondering, I wonder what it is about the back of your yard by the fence that draws you out there so much. But you're sitting in a chair, so that makes a lot more sense. You're resting and, you know, enjoying the nice weather, maybe just kicking back and doing a little bird watching, nature watching, and so that makes sense. But I thought you just like to hang out in the corner of your yard by the fence. But well, that's cool. I wondered if you ever thought about feeding the deer. I just saw a thing the other day that said they made it legal, passed some kind of law that says you can legally feed the wildlife now. So you could put like a little salt lick back there or something like that. And the buck would probably appreciate it. And then you might get some more wildlife action back there. Oh, and I bet he could hop over your fence too. They hopped over our fence at our house, and they've been in our backyard eating our... And I live in the city. I live in Warren. But yeah, they eat our sunflowers and all that.
Well, I actually like to keep them a little bit away from the road here because it's, well, it's not that busy. It's not that much traffic, but it's actually a residential area, and I don't really want to tempt them out of the forest and getting, you know, too close to the houses, but, so probably not. And, yeah, I got a couple of zero-grav chairs out here, so that's where I sit, you know, when I come out to the backyard is this area. Of course, I'm looking at the house, and I'm seeing how it probably needs to be pressure washed. And I'm always out here looking at the antenna for the base station and how that really needs to go up on the top chimney. That's really usually what I focus on is like, I got to get that antenna up the top side one of these days. It still works okay, but really do want to get it on the top chimney with the mast that I put it up. I'm sure I've said this multiple times, about three stories high. 2.5 stories high, that'd be really nice.
K-E-A-W-U-O. Well, with as much as you've done for ARPSC and for me, if you need a hand with that, I'd be more than happy to swing by one day and scale your roof and, find a way to affix that up to your chimney. I know they have, like, I've seen a lot of, like, metal bands that you can use around a chimney that are kind of like those, what are those things called? They're like pipe clamps like you'll sometimes use them on, you know, automotive hoses and whatnot. I think they have some really big ones for like a chimney. And I need to do the same to my house I'd like to put some stuff on my house. I don't have anything on my house yet, just my car and, you know, HDs. But I think a weather station up there would be sweet. Maybe a tri-band antenna and a microwave dish or two. Maybe a Starlink mount too, but I don't want to have to get two of them, so maybe I won't do the Starlink up there. But if you need help with that, let me know. I'm sure me and Dean come by and knock that out. Just be like another ARPSC event.
W8RET, go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Dave.
Got you in there.
Yeah, that's an idea. I'm still kind of hashing it out, seeing how I'm going to do it. I got the real chimney with the bricks, although it's a little old, so I'm wondering about wind load on an antenna. But if it's just a vertical, I doubt there's that much wind load. And then there's the idea, and you're right, there are those bands. I used to put up TV antennas before, and you do have those bands that wrap around the chimney, two of them, one top, one bottom, and then the mast fits in the adapter, and it goes up above the chimney, and then, of course, the antenna attaches to that. Coax runs down, and, of course, I want to do a ground, too. I have a grounding rod in the side of the house, too, so still got to do a little design on this, but, it's the ultimate plan there to improve the base. Dave, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Tim, and the other station, you'll have to refresh me on your name. I think we have chatted before, but your name is eluding me. WUO. My name is Dave. I was just asking, I think Tim answered the question. I was going to ask you about if that was what you were going to do, like aluminum strap fans that you kind of cinch and cinch around the chimney. I'm currently running, so I've got a rather short chimney. Even if we're my house, I probably would not really want to be drilling into it, you know, putting lag bolts or anything like that. And I thought about doing the chimney strap like you're talking about, but I think where I would have it mounted, since the chimney is so short, it would be kind of like a fulcrum point with any kind of wind, and I don't think I would really trust it. But I was talking with another ham, Leonard. I can't remember his call sign, unfortunately. But he had gave me a nice idea. What he was suggesting, I think he did for his, is he had used two pieces of Unistrut with a threaded rod and then just some, you know, washers and bolts, washers and nuts to tighten the two halves together around the chimney. And then he got a good, pretty secure mount for any other kind of pipe clamps, and basically you just get some, you know, spring nuts and anything like that for the unit strut itself, and you can probably get something that would attach, you know, right directly to any size mast that you currently want. So, if you would kindly refresh me on your name. And Tim, how tall is this mast that you're going to be putting up? Myself, I still don't know if I would want to go past 20 feet, so maybe two of them for me, but I don't want to get any more adventurous than that and have to start guying anything off. Let me turn it over to K8WUO, and I'll probably be in here for one more go-around, and then I'm going to head into the grocery store. But over to you, WUO.
All right. K-E-A-W-U-O here. My name is John. And I like your idea, or Leonard's idea. Leonard's a very knowledgeable guy. He's, I haven't talked to him a whole lot, but usually when he shares something like that, it's a great idea. And this one's no exception. I like that idea, for a couple of reasons, is like if you use Unistrut across the chimney, that permits you to add stuff on later, you know. You have all those extra points. Whereas if you use a chimney strap, you know, then you're, you know, once it's up there, it's kind of a handful to undo it and add things. So I think that's a pretty good idea. So I definitely appreciate you coming back and throwing that out there, because you're right. I think that's a great idea, but you're right. You know, for me, I've done a fair amount of hammer drilling and installing anchors and in all sorts of buildings, and you really don't want to do it to brick. I've done it, and it sometimes works, and sometimes it's awful, and it doesn't work, and it makes it all worse. And I would avoid, you know, any kind of hammer drilling into a chimney or anything like that, because it just doesn't work. So the chimney straps or the Unistrut idea is a fantastic idea. I think that's it. Tim?
NAWRO. Yeah, I like both those ideas. And, of course, I'm sitting back here looking at my chimney as we speak about it. Dave, I'm not going to go very high at all as far as beyond the chimney, just to get above the chimney. So it's hard to tell here. Maybe 4 foot on a mast. I have two mast sections, and you can, of course, insert them together and make it even longer. But I think I would just do the one. And then I have a diamond X50, I think it is, and I forget how tall that is, but that's the one I want to put topside. The only issue is, I believe it's the original chimney, and the house is 1936. I've had a mason up there in years past to tuck point it, but I'm thinking it needs a little assistance, because again, we're talking wind load. It's just a vertical, so there shouldn't be too much wind load, as long as I like your fulcrum comment. I don't want to put leverage on that chimney too much, so I'm not going to make it real tall. And then I would have to have somebody go up there and take a look at it and, you know, kind of tidy it up if, you know, it's not structurally sound, shall we say. That's all I got. NAWRO, over to David.
All righty. Well, David might not have heard the end of that. FBI dropped the tail end of that, but I picked you up over on the UMP, so I heard it. But yeah, I'm not sure why that the Warren FBI repeater does that occasionally. But yeah, I don't know when. Usually when somebody drops out unexpectedly from the FBI, I'll try to scan over to the UMP to see if they're over there, and sure enough, you were. But we'll send it over to Dave if he's hearing us now.
Yes, I do hear you now, and I thought I might have timed out the repeater or something. Wasn't certain what had happened. Yeah, I think I heard Tim make mention about the wind load not going up that high, and I kind of concur. Yeah, I don't want to get too adventurous myself. Yeah, I mean, I could certainly use, like, you know, some towers, and I say that with multiple, because I could very easily go overboard with all sorts of different types of antennas, besides for just ham radio, just reception and stuff. So I could certainly have many up, but I think I'm only going to have something like a J-pole and maybe hang a center point of the feed point for a dipole on. The one nice thing I might be able to do is just be able to drop my coax straight down the chimney, because I don't have a fireplace. It's got a chimney but no fireplace. And then down in the basement where the chimney space is, it's got some patch panels, basically some tin over it for ductwork, I guess. So I was thinking maybe I could take one of those out and then just bring out my coax and seal it up so no critters will get in or water, and have a nice, easy entry feed point to the house. But we'll see how that goes. Anyways, gentlemen, I am going to sign. I'm here in the grocery store parking lot, so I'm going to run in and go get some victuals and head home and eat. So, wish the gentleman a great afternoon. Let's see, John, I'll turn it over to you. Nice meeting you, so maybe we'll have a chance to chat some more. So, 73 both, KE8WWUO to pick it up from W8RIT.
All right. I gave a nice long pause there to make sure that the repeater doesn't drop, but that the repeater did drop. But nice talking to you with you, Dave. It's nice meeting you as well, and we'll definitely have to talk again soon. And then Tim, as you probably know, I roughly just got home. And so I'm going to head inside and kind of get ready for the net and get things situated. So I will catch you on Discord or the like here shortly. But no rush. Enjoy the yard. And you ponder and plan out that antenna setup. And let me know when I got to come help. KE8WUO. I'll be clear.
KF8 FTS and Tom, I've got you in there. All right, John, appreciate it. I'll be in shortly. N8WRO here. Let's go. I think KCAKJO. Tom, you were in there, and give it over to FGS.
KCAKJO, yeah, I'm in here. I just got done doing a walk, so I'm heading home. I'll probably tune into Richmond for the net. I won't get home until 1911, what it says. KF8FGS, the other Dave. Good evening. Thank you, KJO.
This is KF8FGS. Yeah, it's good to hear you guys chattering away. Good to hear the repeaters in use. I'm with the better half and the in-laws. Brother and sister-in-law coming back from Greenville Village. What a day we had today. We were the biker gang. We all had our own scooters, our own, I don't know what you call them, mobility aids, I suppose. We had a good time. KFN, I'm not sure where it goes from here in the group. It's KF8FGS. Take it away, whoever's next.
Hey, Dave, it's just us three in here now. John tapped out. The other Dave tapped out. So, yeah, Greenfield Village. Oh, that is nice. I wonder when it comes around to you if you got to ride the train, or at least see the train, I suppose. I also like Henry Ford Museum right there, too. Usually you can't do both. You got to do one or the other. So, but, yeah, a lot of fond memories with the kids over there. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, Greenfield Village. Take a ride on the steam train around the village and get off and then go into Henry Ford Museum and take a look at all the big choo-choos. Yeah, I like Greenfield Village. It really, it interests me more than the rest of my family. I'm over here and just getting into the construction zone at Moorish Road, which is what? Schwartz Creek, something like that.
Yeah, the village. We got down there. We were the first ones through the gates this morning. We were the first ones on the train. Took that trip all the way around the place. That steam train, that was pretty cool. You might get a little bit of ashes on you, but that's all right. And then my sister-in-law suggested we get electric carts. So we were this gang of four, a biker gang, terrorizing the pedestrians. And we took the Model T car rides, and we took the horse-drawn carriage rides, and we went, to the Edison Labs and the Ford Labs and all. It was really cool. I think my brother-in-law and I had more interest in the mechanical parts and of the village, But, you know, all the, quite a lot of history, and we really enjoyed it. KF8FGS, we'll send it over to Tim.
NAWRO, yeah, that sounds like a wonderful day. And I'm not really much for the sun, so a day like today might have been great for me. Great idea on the carts. I should think about that. Of course, Tom and I are a bit of a train nuts. We like anything to do with trains. So, yeah, I think that would have been a good day. All right, guys, I'm going to sign off here from the backyard and get inside and kind of help John with the net coming up. This is NAWRO. We'll talk soon, probably on the net. I'll ship it over to Tom, but I'll step out, but I'll be listening.
KJL. So you had those little electric scooters that said, let's go here, let's go here, let's go here. They went over people's toes walking by, right? Right, Dave? Just kidding. That's good. I like Greenfield Village. Like I said, there's a lot of history in there, and eventually I'd like to get over to the Henry Ford estate and walk through that. I've already been to the Edsel Ford over there in Grosse Pointe. It's really interesting.
Yeah, we did see through the trains. Al and I went to the roundhouse and looked at that. They actually had a display where they had a locomotive over a pit where they would work on the undercarriage. I did not realize the massive amount of machinery that on the undercarriage of those things. It was really cool. It was really cool. But what guy doesn't like all that mechanical stuff and all that horsepower? 100-ton locomotives, and they weren't all that big. They had the bigger ones that were inside. Now, that'll be for another trip. And we're about to be destinated ourselves here, Tom. So I'm going to say 7-3 and KF8FGS. We will be clear on your final. Back to you, KJL.
All right, great chatting as always. I still got another 60 miles to go before I hit the hangar, so just kicking back, cruising, going through the construction. So I will chat at you later. Don't forget the net starts at 1900 hours, 147.2. Chat soon. See you there. 73, KC, KJO. KE8RUH. Is that you, Anthony, out there? KCKJO.
Hey, Tom. Sure is. How you doing?
Oh, coming home from Holland.
Well, hopefully rush hour has treated you okay and you didn't hit too much traffic.
The traffic slowed down around Schwartz Creek, you know, because it dropped down to one lane, and it's been like a 25-minute delay. I'm like, you know, I'm going to pull off into this rest stop, because I know I won't make it to the next one. So I pulled off, used the rest stop, and then walked probably about a mile and a half around it. By that time when I got back on, it was a 10-minute delay, so I made use of my time.
Well, that's good. Yeah, sure, getting out and stretching your legs was nice, and then it sounds like the traffic delay went down, so it sounds like a win all around.
Yeah, but my step count was down today. It was only 4,400. I tried like to get about 5,000 in. But yesterday, I did 7,000 walking around Providence Hospital in Southfield, so I think it evened out over the 2 days.
Yep, you got to work on that law of averages, right?
Yeah, I've been eating kind of stupid lately, so, I mean, and today I went and I got Popeyes in Holland after I was done with the run, because I was chicken, even though I'm going home and having barbecue chicken. You know, so chicken. but yeah, like I said, it just needs to burn off some of the calories that I've gained.
I hear ya. Yeah, I've made a couple poor choices myself, so I'm actually on my way to pick up Buffalo Wild Wings, so I totally know what you mean.
Well, the thing is, I ran out of the house, you know, too fast last week and forgot my, you know, my spaghetti and ended up grabbing McDonald's, which isn't good. And then, you know, didn't get a chance to do a lot of walking last week. And then this week I've just been driving. So, decided to, since I was coming back this way, I'm like, I'm going to stop off at the rest stop, check this one out and see what I can do. And I did a mile and a half in about a half hour, so I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, and if it lets traffic die down, it's a win-win. It's not really like you would have got home any faster.
Exactly, that was the whole purpose. Like, instead of sitting there on my derriere for 25, 30 minutes, you know, to zip over here and then finally go to the Lapeer rest stop and do my normal walk there, you know, what I do with my coworker. Decided to just stop early and do it then. Still going to arrive home at the same time, you know, about 7:15. At first it said 6:30, but because I stopped and let traffic die down, you know, added a half hour. No big deal. Nobody's home anyway.
There you go. You were just going home to an empty house. It doesn't even really matter.
Correct. If it was a better day, I have a friend that lives out on that side of town. So I would have stopped by their house and hung out for a little bit. I would be leaving about this time, 6:30. And I'd be home by 8:30, right along the same time my wife would get home.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know. When there's nothing happening at my house and everybody's out doing stuff, I often find things to do rather than go home. So then everybody gets home around the same time and it's always easy and fun.
Well, exactly. You know, I left about 7:15, 7:30 this morning, got to Portage by 10, took care of that, and I got that done about 11:30. I'm like, well, now what? You know, the only run I had, so I talked to my coordinator. She goes, hey, can you go look at this one? There's one in Wyoming and one in Zeeland, Holland area. And I'm like, well, the Wyoming one is a fire alarm, and I'm not going to connect anything to a fire alarm. I'm not trained for that. I said, but the other one looks like a bird, you know, a BA or a card access run, so I'll take that one. So she assigned that to me and get there, and yep, it was a door strike issue, so I had one in my van. Used one, swapped it out, got done with that, got a hold of my friend, and she's like, nope, today's a bad day. And I'm like, all right. So went, had lunch, and then started my way back east.
You might even get home and still have time to hop on the net.
Well, I'd say my arrival time is going to be 19:11, so I'll hopefully be in the area of the MAC repeater that I can jump on there. I'll probably hit the exit right around the beginning of the net, and then I'll probably check in when it gets that far.
Yeah, I'll have to check in. I'll probably just be in and out again. We'll see what happens, because I, like I said, I'm picking up dinner right now, and somehow on Thursdays, we always manage to eat dinner at about 7 o'clock.
That's about my average. It's between 7 and 8. And if I get home too late from either a meeting or work, I won't eat after 9 o'clock. If I do, it's a simple bowl of cereal because I don't want anything heavy. So I'll pay for it in the morning. KCAK Joe Friday.
All right, Tom, I'm running into Buffalo Wild Wings here. I will try to call back out when I get out. This is KE8RUH, and I will connect with you maybe in a few minutes. We'll get some hot wings. All right, chat to KTKJ.
You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network.
Kilo Foxtrot 8, Golf Sierra Delta, listening.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
KEACBD monitoring.
Connected to CMN Network.
Kilo Foxtrot 8, Golf Sierra Delta, listening. Sorry, I couldn't quite get that. Kilo Foxtrot 8, Golf Sierra Delta.
Kilo Foxtrot 8, Golf Sierra Delta. This is Kilo Alpha 8 Uniform Hotel Golf. Name here is Steve.
Well, nice to meet you, Steve. I'm Chris, and I'm over here in Royal Oak using the local FBI repeater in Hazel Park. How about you?
Chris, and I'm using the Lincoln Mount Clemens, and I'm in northern St. Clair Shores.
Sweet. That one's one of the more funner repeaters I heard of, too, at least in terms of that area. I believe there's one, Mount Clemens, yes, that is St. Clair Shores, my bad. I got confused with I know there was a really good GMRS one over, it's by Saginaw. And it also starts with M. I believe it was Mayville.
Right, yeah, there is links in Mayville, yep, which is up by Carroll, I think, up that way, up in the thumb.
Yeah, I'm so glad that they were able to link things. I started off in GMRS this year, too, and having unlinked repeaters with GMRS is kind of like, because you have to find a good local repeater to hit that is active. I know from where I'm at, I can hit the Detroit, Troy, and also Mount Clemens GMRS repeater too. Although, from what I understand, the Mount Clemens one is kind of out of commission for the time being.
Yeah, could be. I do hear the activity there between 5 and 6. I mean, it got pretty early, and I was scanning, and I have heard the activity there. I wouldn't be surprised. And, yeah, I'm close to Lake St. Clair. I'm very close. And
And yeah, I think I heard you on DMR talking to someone. You were either you work from home or you're the one that was commuting, I can't remember.
Yep, I do the MI5 DMR repeater link stuff. That is really fun, honestly, and I usually do it when I'm commuting. That's probably the time I'm most active, because that's a good 30-some minutes of essentially downtime stuck in traffic. Plus, with DMR, I don't have to worry about bridges necessarily, because unlike analog, the DMR tends to be a lot more data resistant. So if there's any interference, any static, you won't hear it with DMR. Maybe like a lost syllable or so at most.
Okay, that's good to know. I got back into DMR just with, I had a handheld someone, a guy gave me, kind enough, and it was a Wushong, and battery's starting to swell a little bit, you know, so I got a, finally got a DM32, I think, yeah, Bofang, and it seems to work, and I was able to, I was going to put a cold plug in it from the PC, but I was able to figure out how to, program a DMR channel on through the keypad and all that. So, which I found out that's not too common that people do that. So anyway, so that's how I got back onto DMR.
Copy that. I know a lot of people tend to dunk on these bow things, but hey, you can't beat it. Especially that DM32 UV. And a Digi, all that good stuff. If anything, it's just a code plug software that's a little challenging to use. I've noticed it can be a little buggy sometimes too, but overall, like, it's a very fantastic handheld too. Doing this by a V-test, that's what I really like to do. Granted, it's not as easy as with the other bow things I have too. You still have to go through all these hoops to get things programmed in correctly, but it's still possible. Although there are some things I found that you can only do on the software. Do you still actively use that DM32 UV?
Yeah, I've only had it for like 3 weeks. So, yeah, I do. That's my thing. So, and I was able to, because I heard that if you had the radio ID, that began with a 1, you're supposed to migrate to 3. 1 begins with 3, so I could use this network. It wasn't an issue, but I did see on there that it, like, last heard through the radio ID and website and stuff, that it somehow, it does log it. You know, it does somehow, I guess, it does log, but so I updated it with, did the conversion, which I initiated it, and, you know, did other stuff I had to do. And I think it took a couple hours, and then I have a 3. So now I think I'm good.
Wow, I don't think I've heard about that migration thing yet, too, but that's good to know. I know I also started off with DMR like a month or so ago, too, so I'm also relatively new to this side of ham radio, but it's still a really fun one. I'm really happy for it. And I know for the MI5 link repeaters on DMR, like, my radio ID on the last heard website is just completely weird. The talk group is my radio ID. It still gets my call sign, but as soon as you go to, like, the statistics, it's literally all the same numbers every single time I transmit. It's like only my handheld has issues whenever I transmit on that, but I don't know. As long as I can hit it and people can hear me, I'm pretty happy with that.
They don't have that link to brand right now. You know, it's like, oh, some of my entries were in the pink or so, and then something was, the talk group is not right or something. One that was good, but I don't know why it was good. It takes a while to update, and I saw that, so I backed off, and I asked some people, I said, I don't want to wear out my welcome, but I was able to fix it up somehow or another, and it works fine. I don't know if it's like Brandmeister needed them to begin with a 3 for some reason or whatever. I'm not sure what the root cause is or what needed that was for. But anyway, I'm updated.
Sweet. I did hear another station trying to peek through that doubled at the beginning. Unknown station come through. KF8GSD. I guess it was a false alarm. It must have been a bad spin on the repeater. Back to you. Sorry about that.
Okay. It's KAAUHD. Yeah, I run the, like, we call it, like, the backyard repeater, like, a double nickel net, and 443.55 with the PL107.2. So on Monday night at 7 o'clock, I'm the primary net controller for, we've got a little social net. We'll get, you know, a few people check into it. You know, it's not about the numbers or anything like that. It's not associated with anything but Todd's backyard repeater that he has in more than 147-foot freestanding tower, which is 20-foot antenna on top of it. So, yeah, so I do, I've been out there for a number of years, so a lot of years, net control for a Monday night net with some other people. Wait, is this that guy who, I know you mentioned Warren, but I know in Hazel Park there's a radio club, and they had their field day locally here, too, and I know some guy brought in a portable, like, beam antenna for that, too. Is that the guy you're talking about, or is it potentially somebody else? No, Todd is K-H-W-I-N. He has a freestanding tower in his yard, 147 feet. So, he's had it there since, I think, 27 years now. So, in fact, the coach and Warren, he was the last one to put something up, you know, like, yeah, hi. And then they changed the code. So, but it's a little bit of trivia. Wow, that's pretty cool. I don't have a pencil or paper or any way of taking notes at the moment, too. I'm, like, half working on something over here and then, like, half on the radio, too. Mostly at the church right now, just tearing down a 9-square thing for an event tomorrow. But, yeah. Do you happen to remember the call sign for that repeater tower, or is it available on any, like, repeater book type listings at all? Sure. Yeah, it's Todd, K-A-A-W-Y-N, as Todd. Yeah, it's been in the call books for a long time, a repeater book. It's coordinated, and it's at 443.55, so if you go up to any of that, like the Mark or whatever that has the repeaters in vicinity Detroit, you know, Detroit vicinity. Yeah, if you go past the Shaner, if you're going past 696, and you look to the right as you cross Shaner, depending on which way you're going, you look to the north, it's there. I just quickly typed in those frequencies in my VFO mode, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I have 443.550. Is that correct? Yeah, you can, I'm sure, get into Royal Oak, and I just checked it. Yeah, I think he has it down. He was going to do some maintenance on it, or so he might have it, might have it down for the moment, but it's usually up. And they do the Warren cert net on there on every other, no, second and fourth Mondays. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of activity, but open repeater, and one's welcome to use it.
Well, thank you so much for the info. I really appreciate it. I know I typically hang out on the Michigan-wide Beeman network, too. I found that is the most active, whether it's BMR or the UHF network, too. And I know the local GM tower over here is a pretty good one to listen in on, too, especially with their morning brunettes. I'm sure you've heard of them, too. But the tower I like the most, in my humbled opinion, is the Troy GMRS repeater. That one's typically quiet, too, but, like, it's one of the more popular towers for, especially first-time GMRSers to get into as well. And I tend to have the best reception with that here. Someone even reported that they were able to hit it from Wyandotte with, like, a 2-inch antenna. At least that's what was reported, too. And I would 100% believe them.
True. You never know. Remember, I think I had the longest car, like, for the double nickel. We call it the double nickel because it's 5-5. It's close to the freeway. It says 6-5. So, anyway, so someone mentioned double nickel at that 443.55. But he also has one by, if you ever get up to, like, Port Austin area. But the PL there is 114 point something, I think. It's the same
frequency, different PL. Yeah, I believe it. It's distance. I think I had the farthest check-in I ever had was a few summers ago, I think it was. It was down in Indiana somewhere. Some guy was in Indiana. He was able to, you know, keep contact for 20 minutes or so into the repeater. So you never know. Okay, now Ohio, yes, but Indiana, I do not believe it. That is insane. You must have either had like a really high up antenna or there was some weird atmospheric phenomena going on too. That is really cool though. I can't believe you did that. Yeah, I was surprised myself. I was in that control that week and yep. So it was kind of, and he didn't have anything, I don't think extraordinary. It wasn't anything like over the top for sure. I mean, he didn't have you know, like a walkie-talkie or anything like that, but he didn't have anything, if you say, too over the top. Then it was, anyway, it was interesting for sure. Well, I know the most random contact I've had was when I went on a hiking trip all the way to Virginia. I was hiking some mountains over there too, so you started off at the bottom. No reception to any towers whatsoever. GMRS, ham, nothing. And the closer you went to the top, the more different repeaters you'd hit. So you'd have some with one PL tone from one side of the mountain, and then some on the other side. Same frequencies, but different PL tones and different conversations. And at one point, I was even able to hear the parking lot attendants of some nearby parking lot. But after the hike, after the whole mountain thing, despite not making any contact, I decided to still try to make one. And I was able to meet one of the repeater operators in that area too. And I even sent him I think it's a QSL card or something like that too. But yeah, that was really fun. I was not expecting that moment of all moments on that entire trip to make a contact too, but I'm really glad I did. Very special moment. Yeah, I bet it was. It was a couple years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, one guy that, he does check into that, he's a coach with WestronNet and GM, but I don't think he gets into the GM. He gets in maybe somewhere else, I don't know how he gets into it. Maybe GM, I don't. But sometimes he will talk back up this way. He's from Sylvania, Ohio, which is just outside of Toledo, when the bands are open. But I remember him saying once, he's a sightless amateur, and he just said, well, you know, it'd probably be interesting if the guy could, you know, hear different stations coming in. It'd be interesting if people would, like, rescan their television. So I have a little beam antenna, you know. So, yeah, I said, you know what? Maybe that's a good idea. So I took this antenna I have, you know, it's kind of a common beam when you get these $30 ones, and I put it outside on a ladder, rescanned my television. I got, I don't know how many stations, quite a few, including Buffalo, New York.
Wow, I never realized that they did analog television, so I thought that was a thing of the past, but I still see some of those towers up occasionally nowadays, too. Wow. As far as atmospheric things go with UHF and VHF, that is something that's, like, I have not explored at all. So when it comes to atmospheric bouncing, I'm pretty much just, like, an uneducated elementary kid. Just like, oh, atmosphere bouncing, whoa. But that is something I'd like to get into, especially when I get into HF. I really want to get into HF and get a general license, but with the college semester starting up soon, that'll be a little difficult to do, but hey, one step at a time, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I gotta keep up with the studies for sure, and I got my license finally, just like my last year of college, was at Eastern Michigan years ago. But yeah, they would call that normally a tropospheric gusting. So here it's telling you what the temperature was, and it was a digital television. So it was on a tip from a sightless radio amateur, so, but it was a digital, it wasn't analog, it was digital.
Oh, okay, digital video. Okay, that makes a lot more sense then, too. Yep. Sorry, I'm like really tired right now, and I'm still working on this thing over here, too, and I really appreciate you keeping company here. Or else I'll just be out here in the middle of the church courtyard, all alone, with just the crickets ringing. That kind of sounds depressing, but it's not. It's I love my church. I'm really happy for it.
great local church to be a part of here, too.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I can relate. Yeah, I'm involved with my church, too. Men's club, we always have activities and such, and I ring handbells. I tell people I'm in a heavy metal group. And they say, oh, really? A church heavy metal group? I say, yeah, ring handbells. They go, yeah, okay, I'll buy that.
Wow, that's hilarious. Of course, they'll take it then, too. I know what our church suggests we do is put some cash inside, too. Inside the tracks, too, so it's a little more appealing, especially in the serving industry, too. Like, it's a wonderful place to put your tips in, because you can just throw your tips, like, under a table or just give it straight to the waiter. But there, you could just throw in a track in it, too, and that actually works really well, because not only do they get the tips, but they also get directly exposed to the track, too, and you can even then, in person, kind of tell them your testimony if they're open to it, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they can see that, you know, people witness, they, you know, open to witness and stuff like that. I think that's the general term that people use.
I think they use the word evangelize. Personally, I haven't done a lot of that at my local church since I'm more involved in the internal ministry of sorts, too. So a lot of the audiovisual stuff, of course. And recently I was able to get some handheld radios for the church, too, so that we can use it for our live stream coordinations and whatnot, too. It's not a fancy live stream setup, but for, like, the moments you need to communicate, like, having a handheld radio is, like, the best thing ever.
Well, that's good. Yeah, it's good, yes. I've done that on audio boards for church many times over the years and part of the stream feed and such. Yeah, you get I think it's about a $2,000, maybe $1,800, something like that. It's TT Logic, TT something, I forgot the name of it. But anyway, it's a broadcast quality camera. I think a lot of church got those during COVID.
Oh man, I wish we had a good broadcasting camera. We're stuck with, well, the cameras were purchased a while ago by an older pastor, and we got these cameras, from what I understood, during a weird time where there's both old and new technology around, too. So our cameras, believe it or not, use interlaced video. Oh my goodness, nowadays, in 2026, they look like garbage. I hate to say it, but it feels like you're watching a sermon from the 1990s rather than 2026.
Yeah, we used to use, stuff with, before COVID, the cameras we had were, we had linked it up to S-Video, and I could go higher up resolution too, but it was, you know, S-Video resolution, so that was, it wasn't HD, but, just the newer features too now that will go, full HD, and, like you say, we have the streaming. I think it's TV Live. Anyway, I got me thinking here. But anyway, so we do have the video, broadcast quality streaming camera.
Now that is something I wish we had for our church here too. We did add a couple newer cameras to our setup and portfolio, and the difference is just night and day. They're SLR cameras, so they're really high quality, and it just, you go from one terrible looking camera, 1990 quality, to like a modern one that's super crystal clear. The colors are just right. Everything is in focus. And then go back to one of these older cameras. It's honestly kind of funny though. Like, I'm not mad or anything. I'm not trying to complain. I just think it's kind of funny. But thankfully, there is a budget being put in place so that we can update some of these cameras here shortly. So I'm really excited about that aspect as well.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Yeah, okay, yeah, very good. Yeah, I can understand that different technologies and such. And I think it's NRI. I think it's like you can, if you have two of the higher ones, you can, the way you link up the cameras and use some of the coordinating software, you have to have like upgrade the firmware on the
even the broadcast quality ones was, you know, to accept. I think NRI is the industry, kind of the industry standard for some of that. And but yeah, the thing that got me is that I remember was taking care of my mom and she was in some declining health, and so I had to step back a bit. So I got in someone's ear and they bought some things and they got rid of some of the old stuff, and I was pretty upset about it because we could have repurposed it, because I said, you know what, if you're playing a DRD, you know, DVD, by its nature, it's only, you know, it's not HD. So, you know, someone told you, you know, one way or another, you know, we could have repurposed those somewhere else, you know, so that it kind of got underneath my skin a bit, you know. Some people get in here and, oh, they're going to make consistent business, they're going to do this and this, and someone has to find some pot of money somewhere that could have been used for something else, but anyway, that's the way it goes. Yeah, I've always admired how churches budget do, because they're technically non-profit here too, so they're not explicitly going out for profit, but a lot of these church operations do rely on, like, tithes and generous giving from other church members too. And just the way they manage everything to not only keep the lights on, but keep the building cool and warm whenever the season demands, to have the ability to do all these outreaches and to reach the people that actually need it most, that is something I really admire about the church. And whoever's on the payroll team, God bless them. They know what they're doing, and I trust them with my tithe. I'm comfortable giving as much as I want, as much as I can, because I know they'll use it appropriately too. I am studying accounting and financial planning too, and I have taken one or two non-profit government accounting classes, but they were more on the get familiar with all the terms, definitions, processes, rather than get on the ground and dirty with the finances of things that actually go on in nonprofits. It's more of like those introductory classes rather than a deep dive, detailed view. Well, I'll keep up with it there. And I do have a degree in accounting and finance, so I can relate to that. Yeah, and the general term is, like, for nonprofits, they generally call that fund accounting. Well, hello, fellow accounting professionals. I didn't quite catch that term that you called nonprofit accounting. It, like, kind of, like, went out on me, too. Do you mind repeating it again, please? Yeah, no problem. If you look up fund accounting, F-U-N-D, because that's the general, because it's always, everything is, that's how that's how it's nonprofit. Right? It's fund, they move it from one fund to another, so they call it fund accounting. That's the general term for it. I had fund accounting. Thank you so much for clarifying that. I heard something completely different, and I just wanted to make sure. Fund accounting. Yeah, I wish I did more, it's really late, I can't get my words together, but more hands-on work with this type of fund accounting. Whereas what we did last semester was more, here's the terms, here's the general practices, etc. What does this transaction get categorized? What does this transaction get categorized as? Whereas in high school, we did a lot of, like, ledger-based accounting, too, and that was all hands-on. White out. All the papers you ever want to get your hands on, too. And that's where a lot of the learning actually did happen. Like, yes, they teach us the principles, the overall generalities, and then the moment you start putting that pen on paper and the numbers in a calculator, that's when everything clicks.
Yep, they generally, so you go through the, if you took it in high school, which I did too, generally, and they do the same thing in beginning in college, is that you have you go through the accounting cycle, and you have to complete a practice set, right?
Yep, I remember those first accounting college classes. They essentially kind of retaught high school accounting to a degree, of course, but then they added a lot of these interest and, mortgage-type work where you have all this interest accumulating and then all these interesting Excel formulas. I haven't done summer college, so some of it kind of left me at the moment, but I'm sure as soon as I start college within the next 2 weeks, like, it'll just immediately come right back and I'll be back in business. How about that?
Yeah,
Yeah, hopefully you pick up where you left off and all that. Yeah, I used to be the primary programmer and support person on the Ford General Ledger at one time or another in another life.
Wow, that's pretty cool. What do you currently do for work at the moment? Is it more finance related or accounting, or is it like something completely different too?
Yeah, so now mostly I do like reporting and stuff, and then I do some side stuff more hands-on. I do some extra vehicle detailing mold and all that, so like kind of a side gig. A guy kind of got into that with the neighbor a bit and kind of do stuff on my own on that one now, but that's kind of what it is. But mostly reporting stuff.
That sounds really cool. I'm not too familiar with the whole reporting aspect of accounting. Most of the real-world experience that I have is individual income tax related rather than like more corporate or audit or all that good stuff.
You have to take all the general stuff because you have to take certain things to get what they tell, like stuff for 300 level courses and take stuff more. So my stuff is more towards cost accounting is my elective, more towards advanced cost. Because otherwise, they kind of direct you to the more of the financial, which is more like, you know, CPA type of thing. Mine is more towards the CMA, which I don't have, but along those lines. I'm going to let you go, Chris. I want to tie up all these repeaters and all that. Appreciate people allowing us to stay up there because I know they're all linked. So, but maybe I'll hear you on the 443.55 if you ever want to bring that up and just get that link to anything at the time.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me this evening. I literally just finished the work I was doing here at church, too, so you've been a wonderful companion this evening. To everyone listening, I'm sorry for clogging up the repeater and rag-chewing a little bit, but thank you so much for allowing it to. This is Kilo Foxtrot 8, Golf Sierra Delta, Chris from Royal Oak. I'll be clear here on your final.
Okay, very good. And great on your move to or addition of amateur radio and all that. So good luck with your pursuit of that too and your college studies. 373, this is KAA-UHG.
Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network. Currently connected to CMN Network.